Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. Well, as we watched the election results roll in last night, many of us were shocked to see more and more states turn red. Hillary Clinton lost key battleground states she needed to win. Donald Trump is the president-elect. Currently, Hillary Clinton is winning the popular vote by 239,000 votes, but Donald Trump got 279 electoral votes to Hillary Clinton's 228. The Republicans also maintain control of the House, Senate, and a majority of governorships across the country. So what will Republican control of legislative bodies mean for climate change, reproductive rights, civil liberties, immigration, wages, and so many more critical issues? Today, we are going to open the lines to get your thoughts about what's happening. What do you make of what happened? How are you feeling today? How can we move on? If you voted for Donald Trump, we'd love to hear from you. Frankly, we thought we were going to do a show today about how the left can push Hillary Clinton. We thought she was going to win. Clearly, that didn't happen. And if you voted for Donald Trump, we'd like to hear from you. I actually got a card from one of my colleagues this morning with some flowers, which was very sweet. And she said while she was buying these flowers at Andronico's, she found out that one of the workers there, she's known for 20 years, voted for Donald Trump. She said she was shocked, but over the next couple of weeks, she wants to learn why this friend voted for Donald Trump. So we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are joined by two guests. Pastor Michael McBride, who is known as Pastor Mike, has been active in ministry for 20 years. Pastor Mike founded the Way Christian Center in West Berkeley, where he presently serves as lead pastor. Pastor Mike has served on a number of local and national task forces with the White House and the Department of Justice on issues including gun violence prevention, boys and men of color, and police-community relationships. Hi, Pastor Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Sister Rose. Glad to be here with you.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Kathleen Geyer. She is a writer and journalist. Her work has been published in The Nation, The Baffler, and other publications, and she joins us from Chicago. Hi, Kathleen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Pastor Mike, I want to start off with you. What are you feeling this morning?
Well, I'm glad to be alive. You know, I am certainly... you know, I think share in some shock and whatnot. I think most people didn't imagine that Donald Trump would win the election. I think shock and a little dazed is probably the word that I would use. At the same time, you know, I think there is also enough evidence in the cards and in the results that are coming back that does reinforce what a lot of folks have been trying to say for quite some time related to the depth of pain in our country related to issues of race and class and economics. So I think the confluence of all those forces have created what some are calling the unthinkable. I think for a large number of Americans, though, this may actually be the reality they have to deal with every day.
What about you, Kathleen? How are you analyzing all of this?
Well, it's a little hard to analyze because I'm still just in such utter shock. This is surreal. This is something I never expected. Even though I knew the polls were close, I did not expect this. But I am feeling sadness. I'm also feeling a lot of anger that this happened, that the Democratic Party establishment let this happen, that our candidate, Hillary Clinton, managed to lose to this guy. I mean, you know, I'm just really appalled, and you know, and this is a result of long-standing policies within the Democratic Party that just abandoned the Rust Belt and a lot of, you know, working-class people who just, you know, saw their incomes decline and just live in this state of despair, where their, you know, their life expectancy is actually, you know, shockingly, you know, become lower, which is like unprecedented, and just the kind of things they're dealing with. And that despair gave rise to their support for this awful demagogue. And I'm feeling a lot of frustration and anger over that.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people are saying, well, wait, but Hillary did win the popular vote, but not by much. I mean, right now, she's up by about, what, 235,000 votes. I mean, that's not much.
No.
Pastor Mike, you want to jump in there?
I mean, I think, again, part of what this is showing us, you know, I've been saying for quite a while to a few of our folks that, you know, the unaccounted voters in all of our prognostications and analysis were, you know, white voters who were not likely to vote. And the closer that the election was kept in striking distance, I always feared that states like Pennsylvania, you know, the Midwest states where she obviously struggled in the primaries, with Bernie Sanders around the economic message and just the distaste for the status quo establishmentarian politics, that was vulnerable for her campaign. And I do think, you know, a number of events outside of her control may have added to an increasing vulnerability. But I do agree with my sister on the call with us here that there seems to be a certain kind of culpability with the corporate elites of the Democratic Party and even in the Republican Party as well for allowing such a individual to and the media for that matter, individual to rise to this level of prominence where his message could resonate in this way. And I would just say that 58% we're hearing of all white voters voted for Donald Trump in this country. This is, in many respects, the America that we have. And I think the sooner we all grasp and wrestle with the implications of that, the better. But it's going to hurt for a while, I'm sure.
Well, and it's not just men. Look at the headlines this morning. The Boston Globe, white women supported Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. The Slate, white women sold out the sisterhood and the world by voting for Donald Trump. The gender gap favored Donald Trump. What about that, Kathleen? You know, this morning, of course, social media is exploding with responses, but I keep seeing this misogyny, sexism. White women overwhelmingly voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah, as did white men. But there's an interesting division in the white women's vote that I think is very relevant. College educated women, you know, like who have, you know, more income, more affluent, they went for Hillary. Whereas working class white women without college degrees, they went overwhelmingly for Trump. So I think there's a real class gap between women. White women, and that's a really important thing to look at. I think the feminist establishment has let women down in the sense that they portrayed this election as an election about female leadership, and if we just elect a woman, everything's going to be great for all women. That's sort of the trickle-down feminist theory that a lot of mainstream feminist pundits and organizations sort of push that narrative. But, you know, they did very little to address the concerns of working women. Hillary had some policies she was running on that seemed decent, but she did not really push those. She didn't really talk about them very much. And I think these women just thought, well, you know, Hillary Clinton has nothing to offer us. You know, we might as well go with the you know, the white nationalist guy, and, you know, maybe his trade policies will help us. But I think there's the feminist establishment is really has some explaining to do about what happened here.
Yeah, we're just looking at some of the numbers. The gender breakdown among white voters: Trump beat Clinton among white women 53% to 43%. Pastor Mike, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I will say that there has been a really important critique of feminism and kind of white progressive strategies by people of color and black women in particular through the years. And I do think that there is a need for the white progressive political kind of elite of this country to begin to open your ears to a different set of voices when it comes to strategies, when it comes to ideas, because I do think some of the critique of the ways in which these economic policies, these criminal justice policies, these other kind of policies land across the country in different communities is just very different. And I do think that, again, if the numbers also speak truthfully, I think it's 80% of the evangelical vote, which is largely white as well, went to Donald Trump, which speaks to a huge theological, I would say a theological deficiency in the way the American Christian Church is discipling people and helping people to understand our moral and gospel call in a democracy, particularly when it comes to the way people who are poor and who are vulnerable are experiencing the world. So I think there's so much that we're all going to have to wrestle with, and I do think that you know, we have both a lot of opportunities to figure this out, but I do think you know, a lot of people need to rethink what they think they know, because I think this election has shown us that maybe folks don't know as much as they think they do.
Pastor Michael McBride, who goes as Pastor Mike, has been active in ministry for 20 years. He has served on a number of task forces with the White House and the DOJ on issues including gun violence, police-community relationships. Kathleen Geyer is a journalist. Her work has been published in The New Republic and The Nation. And today, we're opening the lines. We want to hear from you. What are you thinking right now? How are you feeling? What do you make of all of this? How do we move forward? And also, if you voted for Donald Trump, I hope you'll call in and tell us why. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's go to Susan in San Francisco. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I'm devastated. I can hardly talk. My comment is a critique of the progressive left. I've been an activist for my entire life, since I was 15 years old, and I've been really frustrated this campaign season to see how much the progressive left tore down Hillary Clinton and too willingly repeated the baseless allegations against Hillary about her emails, about Benghazi, about the supposed pay-to-play corruption in the Clinton Foundation, which never actually existed. There was never any evidence that people received favors from the State Department in exchange for donations to the Clinton Foundation, yet those types of accusations of Hillary's corruption and greed were repeated over and over again by the progressive left on this station, on KPFA, on KQED, in The Nation, without really considering what the consequences would be for this country of engaging in this misogynistic Hillary bashing. We heard more about unreal, made-up scandals like Benghazi and her emails than we did about the Trump Foundation, which was actually guilty of fraud, the Trump University, which was actually guilty of fraud, all the sexual assault allegations. That stuff got less airtime than the made-up, you know, corruption of Hillary.
And well, Susan, let me get a response. I didn't hear many on the progressive left talk about Benghazi at all, but a lot of people were angry because she really didn't come clean about her Wall Street speeches. When Li Fong asked her to release the transcript, she laughed. You know, she really didn't talk about trade when Donald Trump went after her hard on NAFTA. This is one thing I kept talking about from the beginning. What is she going to do when he goes after her on NAFTA? And she didn't really give people a good answer about what she was going to do about jobs. In swing states, most of her ads focused on Donald Trump, not about what she was going to do. Kathleen, what are your thoughts about Susan's comments?
Well, you know, the thing about Hillary Clinton and also her husband Bill is that, you know, the right is out to get them. The right does grossly exaggerate these scandals, like the emails, which I never gave a damn about. But the thing is, the Clintons, Hillary, they give the right material. You know, they do these things that show their bad judgment and cutting ethical corners, like the email thing. I don't think it was worthy of an investigation and a whole big, you know, brouhaha over that. But, you know, she shouldn't have done it. She should have been much more careful, knowing that she's running for president. And with the Wall Street speeches, too. Like, that's another unforced error. She just made those speeches without considering, well, in another year I'm going to be running for president, and this might not look very good, you know. And I compare that with Obama, because yeah, the right has been out to get him absolutely and tried to destroy him every step of the way. But his administration has been clean. He has personally like not done these kinds of arrogant things that give a sense of legitimacy to some of these investigations, even though I think they are, you know, really overblown.
Well, at least come clean on these issues, because she knows how the national media machine works.
Yeah, but yeah. She and her husband have known for decades. She handled it very badly, and I think that was one of her great flaws as a candidate.
Pastor Mike.
I agree with Kathleen said. You know, my dad always taught us growing up in a, you know, neighborhood, don't give your enemy bullets to shoot you with, right? I mean, and I think that there is a certain kind of just ownership that not just Hillary Clinton, but the Democratic Party and others have to own up to, because none of these concerns are new. The primaries are supposed to be a time when I think people really consider with soberness what these kinds of flaws could do. But I just want to push back a little bit on what is being said about the responsibility of the left. I mean, the numbers show us that it was a surge of voters who do not even listen to the left that actually carried Trump over the finish line. And so, you know, no matter what the liberal left was saying, I do think that it's a failure to listen to poor people. Mm. It's a failure to listen to people who are vulnerable. And it's also a failure of the progressives to learn about dog whistle politics and all the many implicit ways that fear, anxiety is communicated through race and through all these kinds of things that we would like to think in a post-racial world aren't important. And until the left really deals with that, I think we're going to continue to at least have the possibility of these kind of surprises. And you know, later on in our conversation, I mean, we can talk about just our Bay Area and how progressives govern the Bay Area. I mean, the Tea Party is not the dominant class or party in the Bay Area, but we still see all kinds of injustices and poverty and exclusion from opportunity happening in the Bay Area. So it's more than just repeating the right-wing talking points. It's about the ability of the quote-unquote progressive left to hear the voices and the pain of the poor. And that is, I think, one of the biggest takeaways that people have to honestly wrestle with.
Mm. We have an email from Rob in San Francisco who says, my thought is Secretary Clinton's campaign failed to generate enough deep enthusiasm. Around the San Francisco Bay Area, you see more Bernie and Obama stickers than Hillary Clinton. Clinton is the most qualified presidential candidate in recent history. The Democratic Party establishment needs to do a lot of work to undo what they have done since 1992. What about that, Pastor Mike? I mean, you had people like Thomas Frank writing about how the Democrats have embraced neoliberalism. They have aligned themselves with Wall Street and Silicon Valley and haven't really done anything to talk about people who are contractors, you know, not making ends meet, losing their jobs to automation, for example.
Absolutely. I think we have to center an economic message that purges the left of capitalist and neoliberal influence. And that means that a lot of people who benefit from the status quo are going to have to ask themselves, are they willing to do what is in the best interest of the poor and those who are struggling to reach into the middle class? This is an opportunity for we who are in these kind of poor middle class kind of dichotomies to embrace the concerns of working class white folks and respect their stance against Wall Street and elite and capitalists. Now, this is going to be a tough role for a lot of us because I do think many of us believe that there is a racial undertone to this historically after the perceived kind of progress of minority and black and brown folks in this country. There's always this kind of backlash. Van Jones called it a white lash yesterday on CNN, which I thought was very perceptive. We're all going to have to start building some coalitions across a difference that we're not probably very excited about. But this is what is before us, I believe, and I think that analysis is right on. And we got to start purging our party from the corporate elite that I think are over determining how the party and how the political systems in this country deliver needs and opportunities to the masses of our country.
Well, let's go to our next caller, Denny in Richmond. Hi, Denny. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Rose. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I was just, you know, there's a lot to reflect on today, but I just think that even though we're very disappointed on the outcome, that the Democrats and their establishment need to learn from this, that they blew it when they didn't go with Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Because we all saw the groundswell that came from Trump's movement of the people rising up. And instead, we decided to go with yet another establishment candidate. So while I'm sorry what happened, I think it's a natural part of the evolution of changing the politics in America.
Thank you for that, Denny. Let's take a few more calls, and then we'll get a response. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello. Thank you. I probably woke up the same way most people did. I thought for a couple of months that Trump might be able to win this, but even getting up this morning is still like a shock. But I did a couple of things. One, Trump is not going to be able to deliver on much of what he promised to his constituents who voted for him. The next 2 years are going to be interesting. If he can't come through, and he's not going to be able to, bring industrial jobs back to the United States. When this stuff sinks in with these people, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of response they're going to have to the fact that he's not going to be able to do this. The second point I wanted to make is that last night while I was watching this and listening to both KOW and KPFA and watching NPR, at least on public television, they were still talking about a two-party system, you know, Democrats and Republicans. I mean, at this point, I think people ought to understand, look, the Democrats are corporatists. They believe in capitalism. They're not progressive. And there may be some people in the state of California who are, but I think what people are going to have to do is they're going to have to rethink, and I think this is really true for everybody who wants to see some kind of progressive change. They're going to have to think about the state and rethink everything. Just rethink, okay, are we going to stay with the Democratic Party? Are we going to broaden this? How are we going to change the state to reflect a more sane and healthy environment? So I think there's a lot of work ahead, and this is going to be an interesting 2 to 4 years.
Well, thank you, Greg. Thank you, Denny. Before we go to break, Kathleen, we're getting a lot of emails about Bernie. People are saying the DNC really screwed up by, you know, backing Hillary and not Bernie Sanders. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's hard to see how Bernie Sanders could have done worse. Maybe he would have, but I think he and Elizabeth Warren and a few others in the Democratic Party, they are sensitive to the pain the economic pain that people are suffering in our current economy. And I think they would be much more able to relate to those voters and get through to those voters. And that's why I really hope we see Elizabeth Warren running in 2020, and you know, or some candidate like that. Because if we just run another Democratic establishment candidate, unless they have the kind of extraordinary charisma that Barack Obama has, I just don't see them winning, frankly. So, and I also think the Clintons basically cleared the field before they ran. They strongly discouraged other candidates from running. Mm-hmm. They got commitments from a lot of groups and a lot of establishment Democratic Party, you know, actors, and you know, they wanted a coronation, and they almost got it. They did not expect Bernie to do as well as he did. But I think that really reflects badly on the party. If it was a more open primary system, we would have ended up with a better candidate. So,
Kathleen Geyer is a journalist whose work has been published in The Nation and The New Republic. We're also joined by Pastor Mike McBride. He's been in ministry for over 20 years. He founded the Way Christian Center in West Berkeley. Today, we are opening the lines and taking your calls. What do you think about this? Donald Trump will be our next president, and the Republicans will control the Senate and the House. Donald Trump's first order of business will be to appoint a Supreme Court justice. And if Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg steps down, she's in her, early 80s now, he might appoint two. So what are you feeling today? What are you thinking? We'd love to hear from you. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
There are many ways you could take part in the conversation today on Your Call, on the telephone, or by sending an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can go to yourcallradio.org, the website. And if you'd like to tweet us, you can tweet us @YourCallRadio. If you'd like to participate in today's show by the telephone, our phone number is 866-798-8255. We have a line or two open at 866-798-8255.
On tomorrow's Your Call, we will continue this discussion. We'll look at the lessons of 2016 for progressive electoral politics. Again, Donald Trump is going to be in the White House with a Republican Senate and a Republican House. Liberals in Washington will be marginal to an extent that we have not seen since the 1920s. So what should people on the left who want to win elections learn about what just happened? We will continue this conversation because it's so, so important. If you'd like to join us today, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Pastor Michael McBride. He founded the Way Christian Center in West Berkeley. He's been on a number of local and national task forces with the White House and the DOJ on issues like gun violence and police-community relationships. Kathleen Geyer is a journalist. Her work has been published in many publications, including The Nation and The Baffler. We have an email from Ted who says, Obama has been pushing hard for passage of the TPP in recent weeks. Maybe this helped tar the Democratic Party with the brush of NAFTA, as seen by disgruntled voters who chose Trump. Progressives, meantime, were often anti-TPP, but many of them were gathering around the pro-TPP establishment candidate. The cognitive dissonance should have been obvious, right? Well, what about that, Pastor Mike? I mean, trade was such a massive issue during this campaign. Trump brought it up during every debate. And, you know, Hillary basically said she's going to create jobs but didn't have a real plan, at least not in the debates. And that's what really mattered to a lot of people who don't go on websites and read long policy prescriptions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the trade policies of our country that have decimated, again, the Rust Belt in the Midwest, where, again, she lost so many states that were directly impacted by these jobs being exported and shipped to other countries. I think the caller was right, though. Like, you know, I think it's going to be quite a heavy lift, if not impossible, for Donald Trump to fulfill his promise that he can bring those jobs back. So I do think that, you know, part of the art of these political campaigns I am starting to realize is that people hear what they want to hear. People put their hopes and dreams in the political promises that are often beyond the ability to be delivered, rather than realizing that there is an analysis, a true analysis about our conditions that require us all to be actively engaging, organizing, and participating in the democratic process, not just at the electoral cycle, but daily, every day, making our cities and our communities stronger. And I do think that Donald Trump's message around trade and the trade policies were just the easier thing for folks to resonate with in the Rust Belt. And Hillary Clinton, I think, continued her very challenging waltz with a set of policies and positions that we obviously saw when she ran against Bernie Sanders. She was not able to answer adequately, and certainly in the general election, we now see that her responses to the trade conversations may have contributed powerfully to such a failure in the Rust Belt and Midwest to galvanize the voters she needed in order to win.
And Kathleen, Lee Fong, a journalist with The Intercept who was on our panel last night, has been tweeting all morning about the fact that Hillary Clinton lost in a number of rural areas where President Obama won. And this is really interesting. He just tweeted that in Genesee County, which is Flint, Michigan, Hillary Clinton got 19,000 votes. In 2012, Obama got 57,000. So again, in Flint, Michigan, Obama 57,000, Hillary Clinton 19,000.
Well, I think Hillary... part of the problem with her as a candidate is that she's simply been around too long. Everyone touted her experience, but if you look at the president who elected who had the most experience, a lot of them were not very successful presidents, and that's because they were too tied into the system to really shake it up very much. And I think her whole history, her husband's history of supporting NAFTA and deregulating Wall Street and all the rest of that was just like an albatross around her neck, and she couldn't really really portray herself, convince people that she really cared about working people's problems, and that she had abandoned the Democrats' neoliberal past because she embodied it.
And
unfortunately,
it looks like Michigan, according to the New York Times, is not completely red yet because it's so close, but Donald Trump's got 47.6%, Hillary Clinton 47.3%. That's in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Kathleen.
I think one thing that hasn't been talked about enough that we really need to talk about is the decline of labor in this country.
Yeah.
And if we had strong labor unions, I mean, like white men who belong to labor unions, they support Democratic candidates, which you know, men who do not, you know, go overwhelmingly Republican. I think, you know, the labor is a crucial institution, and it helps build power for working people. It educates working people about their interests and makes them much more likely to vote for progressive candidates. So that's just been a devastating loss. And of course, Michigan is one of the places where, you know, it was once a union stronghold, but now unions have become so marginal. So that's like, that will be a crucial thing for progressives to work on is rebuilding labor and making it easier to organize, because that's one of the most powerful weapons we have.
And we need more labor journalists also.
Yes, that's definitely true. There's a decline in labor journalists. Mm. There used to be one for every newspaper, and now there are hardly any. You know.
Right. There's an op-ed in the LA Times today by an economist who writes, Clinton lost because the economy under Obama did not perform well enough to meet the threshold of happiness. Economic growth was anemic for nearly all of the last 8 years. As a result, job creation lagged far behind the record set during other post-recession recoveries. Today, we are opening the lines to take your calls about what happened last night. Donald Trump is president-elect. He will have a Republican House and a Republican Senate. What are you thinking? What are you feeling today? How did this happen? How do we move forward? We'd love to hear from you. You can email, I think we've got full lines right now, but you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Kathleen Geyer is a journalist. Her work has been published in The Nation. Pastor Michael McBride founded the Way Christian Center in West Berkeley. He served on a number of local and national task forces with the White House and the DOJ on issues like gun violence and police-community relations. Let's go next to Graham in San Francisco. Hi, Graham.
Hi there.
Hi.
What I've heard a lot so far is what happened to the Democrats and why did we fail? But I haven't heard a lot about what's the path forward from anybody. We have 2 years where we have a legislator that's going to be controlled by the Republicans. We've got a demagogue in the White House. So how can we create a firewall that can bridge us till the next midterm election? And I think the only option on our table is to let the things that we've been saying we hate the most, which is lobbyists and super PACs, the only way to influence this legislative body in a way that we can protect the rights in social progress that we've had under Obama the past 8 years. I actually started a company called Mimer, Twitter with M, back in 3 or 4 years ago. That was essentially a crowdfunding site for super PACs and lobbyists. And it was a bipartisan site, but I think we ended up pausing it for this election. But I think that something along those lines might be the path forward, the way that we can protect ourselves and the society that we have built and we're enjoying today.
Let me take a few more calls, and then we'll get responses. A lot of people have been waiting patiently. Thank you for calling, Graham. Let's go to Philip in Brisbane. Hi, Philip.
Hi. Good morning. I hope this doesn't sound terribly vindictive or mean-spirited, but, you know, Trump got a lot of boost from his bombast, and he said a lot of outrageous things. He accused the president and Hillary of treason. That's serious. But more specifically, he also said that disruptors were paid $1,500 and an iPhone to come and disrupt his rallies. And if there is no basis in fact for that, I think that he's got to be called on the carpet for these kinds of things, and it's up to us to follow up and push back on these things. If there's no basis in fact about paying people to disrupt his rallies, he should be the one to pay personally. And that's my feeling, and I'm sorry, I'm upset about this election, but, well, I'd just like to get your ideas about that.
Well, thank you. He also called for Obama's birth certificate, and now Donald Trump and President Obama meeting in the White House, I mean, this is going to happen soon. Philip, thank you for calling. A lot of people have similar emotions and feelings this morning, and that's why we're opening the lines. Let's take one more call, and then we'll get responses. Daniel in Oakland. Hi, Daniel.
Hi. Hi. Well, first, I just want to say I'm totally devastated by this, and my heart goes out to those who are terrified by and of Trump. I think he worked hard to make that emotion felt right now, and I'm very sorry for that. Two quick points. One is on the Supreme Court. I think that Democrats really need to hold the line on any nominations that are put forward by Trump. That's what they did, and we need to basically push until we get some kind of new protocol where maybe it's one for one, but it's not going to be winner take all. They can't block Obama's judge for a year and then put in two or three judges of his choosing. So we need to push our senators to make sure that happens, and I don't think the Republicans will do away with the filibuster just to get their judges in. Then one last point is that I don't think enough was made about Hillary taking on the NRA. I think that, as far as I know, it's the first time a major candidate has done that, and she was not really lauded enough, I think, for that. So those are my comments and kind of questions.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. Pastor Mike, do you want to take that one first?
Sure. I mean, I think we have not seen any evidence that the NRA over the last, say, since Newtown, actually, has been able to win campaigns. As a matter of fact, I don't want to give you a percentage, but it's an overwhelming majority of all the NRA-funded candidates since Newtown have been soundly defeated, and even during this election cycle, state propositions and other things to put in more common sense gun reform has actually, we're actually very successful in a lot of states across the country. So, you know, I don't want to understate the NRA's influence, but I don't want to overstate it either. I do think that to the caller's question about where do we go from here, I think we have to have a really serious conversation about how do we organize poor white middle class folks in this country. And I think that obviously the Tea Party and Trump and even with the Republican Party have figured out a way to keep them in place as a voting bloc using, issues of values, what they call value issues of abortion and same-sex marriage and other things to allow that to perhaps trump some of the issues related to their economic woes. So I do think the progressives and Democratic Party have to figure out a new way to organize poor working white folks. These are the folks that actually elected President-elect Trump. It is not the progressive base that I think failed more than it was a surge of voters that people just were not accounting for. And that is, I think, a failure of our organizing, a failure of our ability to frame these conversations in ways that resonate beyond our kind of bastions of so-called liberal and progressive centers in the country. And that's my kind of immediate reaction, I guess.
Kathleen, what would you add?
The left, people on the left have long said that there are all these people in America who are not voting, most of them poor and working class, and we've urged Democrats to take up a more progressive economic message to bring them out and to get them voting. And ironically, this election proves that there are these hidden voters. They did come out this time because they did hear a candidate addressing their concerns. And I think that's a lesson for Democrats that we have to find a new way of communicating progressive ideas. I think the whole rhetoric, Hillary Clinton's rhetoric about working families and that kind of thing, I think that sounded stale and inauthentic. And I think she had some good policies. She really did, but she never found a way to effectively communicate that to people.
And when you say, Kathleen and Rose, that this rebuilding of the strategy of the progressives have to start at a local level, though, I mean, I think if we're seeing the way cities are being governed under progressive leadership, and it is radically displacing the poor, causing people to have to work 20-hour weeks in order to make their ends meet, I haven't found that progressive leaders are even able to govern locally in ways that actually send the signal that poor working Americans are their priority, which I think again speaks somewhat to we can't start this conversation at a national level. I believe it's a reconsideration of how we are building the infrastructure of a political engagement and political social vision strategy moving forward that allows working class poor folks to see themselves in the future of our country and not feel like they're being left behind.
Well, and speaking of what happens in the states, because the political process has been hijacked over the last 8 years, what happens in the states is so, so crucial. Time magazine has a piece about the Republicans flipping control of state executives in Missouri, New Hampshire, and Vermont. A Republican governor won in Vermont. That means the Republicans will hold the governor's offices in at least 33 states, up from 31. Another stunning loss for Democrats last night. Pastor Mike?
Yeah, and I think that that speaks again to the failure. Now, people want to do a postmortem on Bernie Sanders being the solution, but he ran a flawed campaign himself when it came to actually reaching beyond the kind of, white voter profile as well. He was not able to galvanize the base of the Democratic Party, which are African American women. I think it's 96% of African American women voted for Hillary Clinton yesterday, and Bernie Sanders, in his campaign, was not able to galvanize Black and Brown voters in the way that he could have and should have. So I do think that there's this sense that we have to continue to figure out what is the new framework for building a multiracial, multi-class platform and coalition that allows people to move at the local, state, and federal level to deliver the kinds of needs and aspirations that people need. And part of the opportunity is redistricting. Part of the gerrymandering of the districts that happened in the off-year elections during the census, I think, is a strategy that we all have to start turning our attention to and challenge the Democratic Party and other progressive and even maybe conservative other interests to fund down the line races that help people build the political infrastructure to win and lead in the redistricting process in their local county and state community.
Let's go to our next caller, Vilma in Berkeley. Hi, Vilma.
Hi. Thank you, Rose, for opening up your phone lines for folks and all the great coverage in Standing Rock.
I'm a
Berkeley mom. I have a student who's a freshman at Berkeley High School. We got a robocall this morning that the students were planning a walkout.
Hmm. Wow.
And our young people.
Oh, sorry, Vilma.
Also,
we lost
my youngest son.
Vilma, we lost you for a minute. Can you repeat that? You got a robocall that there was going to be a walkout at the school?
Yeah, the Berkeley High students were planning to walk out to protest the election.
Wow.
And also my son, who's in the fourth grade in Berkeley School, asked my father, my husband, his father, whether he was undocumented.
Wow.
Young people do absorb what's going on, and they get concerned. And, we're all in California in kind of a bubble. And just it's very shocking to see that a man who held no elected office previously and said these horrible things about women and Muslims and Mexicans to win. I mean, the young people I were around were very surprised and shocked that someone like this could actually be the leader of the United States.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to do a whole show about how to talk to kids about all of this, because I think it was on NPR they had a really shocking piece about how a number of white kids surrounded the kids of color and said, build the wall, build the wall. Kathleen, what about that? So many people are having these conversations with their children this morning.
Yeah, it's hard to explain. And Trump is a very dangerous figure and just very threatening. I really worry about the physical safety of immigrants and people of color in this country. I think Trump's election really empowers white nationalists, and there's going to be like a huge uptick in racist and anti-immigrant harassment and violence. And that's one reason I even though I'm not a big Hillary fan, I did vote for her. I did write pieces urging other progressives to vote for her. I thought it was very important to stop Trump. And now I'm just really terrified about what the consequences will be.
Pastor Mike, you serve as the lead pastor at the Way Christian Center in West Berkeley. What are you hearing from parents?
Well, start with my own home. My daughters seem to be pretty invested in the Trump-Clinton dynamic. I think my daughters, who are dark-skinned, beautiful girls, have been, over the last several months, being called names at their school, and they attend schools in Berkeley. And it's obvious they're being called things that they're hearing either from their own parents at home or family members. We told them this morning that they are loved by God. I asked them to repeat after me that God loves me. I am black and beautiful, and I am not the problem. And we're going to probably keep saying that to them, at least for the short term, until some of this kind of white anger and anti-black nationalist sentiments really die down. I would say to all of us who are people of faith that we have a responsibility to, I think, engage in spiritual practices that facilitate healing. And if you're not a person of faith, find you some practices, whether it's meditation or yoga or walking, breathing the air. Find something that allows us all to reconnect with our humanity and to do some self-healing, and even reassure our children and even those we may not understand or agree with that we have a shared humanity and that we only have this one land that we are called to live on together, and we have to support one another. I will say that the kind of vulnerability that marginalized populations, whether they're black, indigenous, immigrant, LGBTQ folks face, can only face that vulnerability if we allow them to be isolated. So it does call for us in this moment to learn from history and make sure that if indeed they are going to be targeted by the state, that everybody rises up in a massive act of solidarity and resistance and will not allow them to be taken by law enforcement, to be bullied at school, to be targeted by nationalists. But we all make sure that they have to take us all if they're going to come for any one of us. And that is one way we can neutralize the kind of sentiments that may be emerging with this authoritarian candidate we seem to have elected.
Well, your girls are lucky to have such an amazing dad. Pastor Mike McBride founded the Way Christian Center in West Berkeley, where he serves as lead pastor. Kathleen Geyer is a writer. Her work has been published in The Nation. Kathleen and Pastor Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for your phone calls and emails. We were inundated. You know, we're going to keep unpacking this. We can't just sort of move on from this. Lots and lots of Bernie Sanders emails, lots of emails about the DNC, what they did, what they didn't do. And we will continue to follow this. I'm taking off some time for a vacation. I'm not quitting because of Donald Trump, although I have thought about it, I'll be honest with you. I'm just going to take off some time for vacation. You'll be in good hands. Thank you so much for your support. Thanks for listening. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. On the next Your Call, we'll look at the lessons of 2016 for progressive electoral politics. With a Trump presidency and Republican control in both houses of Congress, liberals in Washington will be marginal to an extent they have not seen since the 1920s. So what should people on the left who want to win elections learn from what just happened? It's Your Call with Matt Martin and you. ¶¶